The Bitcoin halving is here, and, well, as usual, the crypto world is just buzzing, isn't it? Price predictions everywhere.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Will it moon? Will it tank? That seems to be the only question.
It really does. But you know what we're thinking? Let's maybe tune out that noise for a bit.
Exactly. I mean, the price stuff is fun, sure, but we want to dig a bit deeper. What's the real story? You know, how healthy, how resilient is Bitcoin's underlying network for the long haul?
That's the core question for this deep dive. We're pushing the charts aside, just for now, and focusing on the foundations, the things that actually determine if Bitcoin can, you know, endure.
And we've looked at some analysis on, like, miner dynamics, node resilience, transaction vitality, basically the network's pulse.
Right. The mission here is to give you a clear picture of Bitcoin's actual long-term network health beyond the hype cycle.
Okay, so where should we start? Maybe with the miners. They're kind of the engine room.
Great call. Yeah. The miners, they run the computers, process the blocks, secure the whole thing. They're fundamental.
And the halving hits them directly. Their block reward, the Bitcoin they get for mining a block, it gets cut right in half.
Which on the surface makes you think, okay, won't that just squeeze out the little guys?
Yeah.
You know, the smaller miners who maybe aren't swimming in cash. Lev profit margin.
You'd absolutely think so. It seems logical. But here's where the history gets interesting. If you look back at what happened after previous halvings, like the one in 2020,
right,
the total computing power, the hash rate, it often takes an initial dip, sure, but then it tends to not just recover, but actually surge. New all-time highs.
Wow. So even with less reward per block, the overall security, that hash rate, finds a way to bounce back and even grow.
Yeah, it suggests a certain resilience. Maybe larger, more efficient operations step in, or existing ones upgrade, they adapt, they keep investing. But this does bring up another point.
Ah, yeah, the C word, centralization.
Exactly, is that increased security, that higher hash rate, worth it if it means power gets concentrated? Like if only a few huge mining pools control most of the network.
That's the trade-off, isn't it? More security against certain attacks, maybe, but potentially undermining that core principle of Bitcoin being decentralized. A system controlled by the many, not the few.
It's a huge tension. A really high hash rate is great protection, but if, say, three pools control 60%, that's a different kind of risk, right? Potential censorship, maybe? Control? It's something the community is always grappling with.
Definitely. So that's the miners. Under pressure, but adapting. With this centralization question hanging over it, what about the other pillars? Like the nodes.
Right, the nodes. Often forgotten, maybe, but absolutely crucial. The unsung guardians, you could say.
Okay, quick refresher for everyone, maybe.
Yeah.
What's their main job? Why so vital?
So nodes are basically just computers running the Bitcoin software. Anyone can run one, theoretically. And their job is to independently check every transaction against the rules, and they keep a full copy of the entire blockchain history.
They're the rule keepers, the record keepers, ensuring everything is legit and the history can't be changed.
Precisely. They uphold the integrity, the transparency of the whole system.
So it follows that having a good number of full nodes, the ones with the complete history, that's a sign of a healthy, robust network.
Absolutely. More full nodes means more copies of the ledger, more points of validation. It makes the network harder to attack or control.
And the numbers look decent, right? I saw something like over 16,000 reachable nodes late last year.
Yeah, according to bitnodes.io, it was around that mark, which sounds pretty good. Definitely shows significant participation. But there's a nuance here, too.
Okay, what's the catch?
Well, it's about where those nodes are located. The data suggests they're pretty heavily clustered, mostly in, you know, North America, Europe, wealthier regions with good, stable internet.
Ah, so not evenly spread out across the globe.
Not really, no. Which raises that vulnerability question again, doesn't it?
Yeah. What happens if there's a major internet blackout in one of those key regions? Or, like, a government crackdown specifically targeting nodes in certain countries?
Exactly. Could that disproportionately affect the network, even if the total number looks high? It highlights the need for much better geographical distribution. True resilience needs that global spread.
Makes total sense.
Yeah.
Decentralization isn't just about how many, but also where. Okay, so we have miners adapting but concentrating, and nodes being numerous but clustered. What about actual usage? The transactions.
Right, the transaction pulse. Is the network actually being used? That's key.
Because if nobody's sending Bitcoin, then Well, what's the point?
Exactly. And the data here is, I think, quite positive. Even when we're not in a crazy bull run or right after a halving, we consistently see like 300,000 to 400,000 transactions per day, give or take.
Okay, that's pretty steady. It suggests real utility, doesn't it? People actually moving value, not just speculating on price swings.
It does suggest that, yeah. Genuine activity. But then we hit the other side of the transaction coin, the fees.
Ugh, yeah, the fees. Yeah. You've all been there, right? When a network gets jammed trying to send something and the fees just painful.
Remember 2021? Seeing fees jump to like $50 for a single transaction, that's not great for everyday use.
Not at all. Especially if you're trying to send smaller amounts, it just doesn't work.
And that fee volatility, those spikes, that's a real challenge for a wider adoption. Which brings us to layer two solutions. Things built on top of Bitcoin.
Like the Lightning Network, designed for faster, cheaper payments.
Exactly like Lightning. It aims to take a lot of the smaller, quicker transactions off the main chain, process them almost instantly and with super low fees.
And it's getting traction, right? I heard something about millions of open channels now.
Yeah, the growth in capacity and the number of channels has been significant. It definitely shows potential as a scaling solution. It works, but there's another but.
Always a but. Okay, what is it this time?
Well, usability. Is it easy enough for the average person to actually use Lightning? Or is there still too much of a learning curve? Setting up channels, managing liquidity. It's not quite as simple as just sending from a regular Bitcoin wallet yet.
That's a fair point. If it's too complicated, people might just stick with the main chain and, you know, put up with the fees or wait until they drop, which isn't ideal either.
Right. And this hits home when you think about real people using it. Like, imagine someone, let's call her Sam, a freelancer. Maybe she gets paid in Bitcoin.
Okay, yeah. Sam the freelancer.
For Sam, network health isn't just a good point. The network doesn't exist in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And yeah, there are definitely external things that could have a huge impact. Regulation is probably the big one.
Everyone's stepping in.
Yeah. New rules, crackdowns on mining, restrictions on usage. Depending on how governments approach it, regulation could either be a massive boost or a serious obstacle for adoption and network health. It varies so much country by country, too.
And the energy debate is still rumbling on, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Bitcoin mining uses a lot of energy. Now, there's progress. Lots of reports suggest maybe over 50% is now powered by renewables, which is a positive trend.
But the headline, Bitcoin uses more energy than country X, still grabs attention.
It does. And that negative PR, whether entirely fair or not, can definitely influence public perception and maybe even regulatory attitudes. It's a persistent challenge.
Okay, regulation, energy. Anything else lurking out there?
Well, looking further ahead, there's the sort of sci-fi threat, maybe. Quantum computing.
Ah, the idea that future supercomputers could break Bitcoin's encryption.
Theoretically, yes. It's probably a long way off. And there are potential defenses being researched, like quantum-resistant algorithms. But it's a long-term technological risk that has to be on the radar.
Okay, so quite a few potential disruptors out there. Let's try and pull this all together then. What's the overall picture?
Well, I think what we've seen is a network that actually shows quite a bit of resilience, wouldn't you say? Miners adapt after halvings. The node count is substantial. Transaction volume stays pretty consistent.
Yeah, there are definite strengths. It hasn't just collapsed under pressure. But like we discussed, there are clear challenges too.
Absolutely. Those vulnerabilities are real. The risk of mining centralization isn't going away. Those fee spikes are a problem for usability. And these external shocks, regulation, energy concerns, future techs, they could definitely shake things up.
So it's not perfect, not by a long shot, but maybe also not fundamentally broken. It feels like it's constantly evolving, constantly facing new tests.
That seems fair. Vigilance is needed, right? Proactive development, community efforts to address things like node distribution or layer two usability. It's an ongoing process to keep it robust.
It really is. So maybe the final thought for you listening is this. Considering everything we've talked about, the resilience, the vulnerabilities, the potential changes ahead, how do you picture Bitcoin's network evolving over, say, the next 10 years? What does that future look like? Definitely something to mull over.